This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. You're listening to Inside Story with Lee Chui Lin and Sharmila Ganesan. Tonight, we are discussing the cost of childcare.
So first, we look at how much childcare actually costs in Malaysia and whether it's accessible to everyone. And then, what kind of larger support systems do parents need?
So we want to hear from you. Is childcare affordable in Malaysia? And what do you think should be in place to help parents? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08. So tonight's Inside Story is something of a sequel because yesterday we actually spoke about safety when it comes to taskas, childcare centres, and the issues that are inherent in that, whether it is in terms of licensing and the like. But one of the things that came through loud and clear in the messages was this issue of accessibility and affordability and whether or not people can even afford childcare at this point in time, which had us thinking maybe we should do an entire show on it and really look at why it costs what it costs and what the surrounding systems are that make it so necessary.
Yes, and not the least because according to a study by Baby Centre, over 80% of Malaysian parents rely on others to care for their children, right? So just looking at the stats, about 40% turn to babysitters or nanny services, 41% rely on grandparents or other relatives to take care of their children. And if we hone in on the cost, fees for something like babysitting or nannies average at around 1,000 to 2,000 ringgit a month. If you contrast that with hiring a domestic helper, it can come up to around 22,000 ringgit for the first year. But that, of course, doesn't necessarily include things like food expenses and others. And as we know, the cost of having a domestic helper very necessarily is going up as well.
So then, of course, you've got daycare. And a kind of check by Malay Mail found that registered daycare centres start at around 600 ringgit, but the costs do vary with the location, the ratio of sitters to children, the types of meal provided, the activities offered. And understandably, daycares typically charge more for young children who require more attention because, I mean, that, of course, is just a question of manpower and attention and the like. So this is where we find ourselves. And parents who are unable to afford these costs and who may not, for example, have grandparents or relatives to take care of the children may therefore then make the decision to stay home, work part-time. And this decision can then lead to fewer career opportunities, slower progression, difficulty rejoining the workforce later on, all issues that are very well well-established, well-covered at this point in time. But others yet may resort to unregistered childminders because of that difference in price. And this, I think, it comes with so many issues, right, including safety risks, including worries of abuse and the like, and whether or not the people who are actually minding your child have undergone training, are properly supervised. There are so many things that are packed into this seemingly simple question of childcare.
And I think when we look at least government initiatives when it comes to supporting childcare, supporting parents with care for their children, they largely tend to fall into some very specific areas. On the one hand, you have something like the initiative from the government last year, which allocated 30 million ringgit to improve childcare centres and preschools within government buildings and hospitals. This was under Budget 2021. Finance Minister also announced a matching grant of 20 million ringgit for the private sector to provide childcare centres within their premises. So that's one aspect. Subsequently, there are also welfare-related schemes that have been rolled out. For instance, the Sikamba scheme under the Selangor government, which subsidises 100 ringgit for children who are 3 years and younger in childcare centres registered with the Community Welfare Department. That said, there are some definite gaps there, right? Because if you're an average family, a middle-income earning family, perhaps with one, two children in a taska, the cost of that can often be quite extensive. And whether then that allows you to make the kind of decisions or choices you might need to make, whether you need to decide, for instance, who do we, is it perhaps more cost effective to have one parent stay home? These are difficult choices to make, and I think often leads to other issues in terms of a family's economic ability, and then in a larger sense, as a society, how we progress.
Now, in yesterday's show, we slammed Sweden. Not us. It was Twitter. But, you know, nonetheless, we kind of went on a tear about Swedengate. But a 2021 UNICEF report actually ranked Luxembourg, Iceland, Sweden, Norway and Germany as the highest when it comes to childcare provisions among high-income countries. So to give you a picture, right, of how other countries might be doing it, in Sweden, parents can send their kids to preschool after the first year. All children are guaranteed a place. These preschools, and the hours are crucial, are open from 6:30 to 6:30, basically, you know, a.m. to p.m. And they can function around shifts, night, weekend roles. When children reach the ages of 3 to 6, childcare provision is free for up to 15 hours a week. Before that, costs are based on a parent's income and typically cost around 3% of their salary. And the government also provides a monthly child allowance. And that sounds great. I think that we are quite far away from that, but that kind of encompasses the different things that we want to talk about this hour. So firstly, we're going to be examining how much childcare is, why it costs what it costs, and then later on, really, what kind of support needs to be provided for parents so that childcare and its accessibility isn't the stumbling block, I guess, that it currently is. We'd like to hear from you. Is childcare affordable in Malaysia? And what should be in place to help parents? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Anisa Ahmad, President of the Association of Registered Childcare Providers Malaysia. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:15. You're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're talking today about the cost of childcare, and that's what we're going to be diving into now. We'd like to hear from you. Do you think childcare is affordable in Malaysia? And really, in a larger sense, what should be in place to help parents? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we're joined by Anisa Ahmad, President of the Association of Registered Childcare Providers Malaysia. Anisa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for calling me.
So can you give us an overview of the TASCA industry in Malaysia? What are the options available, including, unfortunately, you know, people who are unregistered or unlicensed?
Okay, TASCA industry may look profitable industry because of the demand in Malaysia, but actually it doesn't, because of the parents would prefer to spend on other things rather than TASCA. Most Malaysians, they don't think that the development of their children are important. Anyways, in Malaysia, we have 4 types of registered TASCA. First is the TASCA community, run by the NGOs or the private, but subsidized by the government, usually for the B40 community of the area. It caters for more than 10 children based on the size of the premises. Secondly, workplace TASCA, run by private, and usually is situated somewhere near the workplace as a benefit for the workers with the young children. Also cater for more than 10 children at any time based on the size of the premises. Thirdly is the home-based TASCA, situated in the child provider home and can only cater 9 and below number of children, also based on the size of the premises. And last but not least, which are the most common, institutional TASCA, which most parents send to their children to, also cater for more than 10 children and based on the size of the premises. And then for the unregistered TASCA with JKM, pengasuhan di rumah, they cater up to 4 children. What they need to do is just inform JKM that they're operating at home. But as we know, most of them, they don't bother to inform JKM, right? And then we also have nanny on the go. It's where the child carer went to the children's house, registered as maid under the home ministry. And the other option is PASTI, kind of TASCA and TADICA managed under the PATI PAS.
So what are the pricing structures across the board? Is there a range that you can share with us?
Well, it depends on the services and location. Not all TASCA are costly. The expensive one are the TASCA which attach with TADICA or the premium TASCA. Example, TASCA for the banks, big companies or with the high-end customer. That can cost up to $3,000 per month. Average TASCA for private is around $600 to $800. And even they have even lower than that. Depends on the location and the, which state TASCA located. Most of these TASCA are the good one with a lot of experienced child minders and teachers. But I don't think so they can hold for long because operational costs now have shot up tremendously.
So you mentioned some numbers, right? But
yeah.
Let's just say on average, and let's say in the Klang Valley, what can a parent expect to pay in fees for full-time childcare on average?
But in KL, it still depends. Is it outskirts of KL or is actually within KL? Is it the type of TASCA? Is it community TASCA? So it can be a range of around 250 to 3,000. Yeah, that gap.
And how does that compare to what we were paying perhaps 10 years ago?
I think still the same. Not much changes in the price of the TASCA. TASCA fee, yeah, not much.
So what have you heard from parents regarding these costs?
Well, parents, especially the M40, can't afford if TASCA increase the fee. But if TASCA do not increase their fees, more TASCA will close down and government does not have choice but to take up the gap. TASCA run by government agencies such as the Pusat Anak Genius, TASCA Kemas and TASCA Perpaduan are all running at more than 1K per child. But for us, at the private TASCA, lower than that. As I mentioned, it can be 200 to, the average is about 500 to 800. Okay? And then 90% of TASCA in Malaysia run by private and only 10% by government agency. So even TASCA in Ministry of Women, Family and Community Development run by private, not by their own agency. Why? It's because it's very costly to run TASCA. Besides that, it's also always a challenge to handle parents' attitude and the high turnover of child minders and teachers. So whether parents like it or not, it's going to be increase in TASCA fee very soon.
Mm. So this is something we've been hearing a lot from our listeners. What do you make of the fact that the general sentiment from parents is that the cost of childcare of TASCAs are too high?
Actually, at the moment, it's not really that high. Affordable, but if we keep on, if the childcare provider keep on, maintaining this price, they will somehow or other will lose out and will be, out of the business. So actually what PBM did, we asked the government need to play a big role in maintaining this private TASCA. So what PBM asked, proposed was to increase the subsidy, the fee subsidy for the TASCA, because at the moment the government only subsidize at 180 per child, which is outdated. And the salary per capita for parents who are eligible to have to get this subsidy is 800 per household, which is far outdated. The government need to increase the subsidy to at least 500 per child, and the salary per capita should be at least 3,000, so that not just the B40 will gain the benefit, but also the M40 and the lower T20. If we didn't address this seriously, and the fee cannot be increased, and all the good and quality TASCA will be collapsed.
Help us understand, right? Where does the bulk of the payments go, the bulk of the money goes in terms of running a TASCA?
Okay, more than 50 to 70% goes to the child minders and teacher salaries, because we have to pay them high to make them stay in the industry. The industry is not a glamorous job, and most graduates does not have interest in it. The workload is demanding compared to salary received, plus continuous training, learning for the childcare provider, minders and teachers, which cost a lot of money too. So these are all the things, to be competitive in this industry, because most of the child minders and teachers, they would rather stay in government TASCA rather than in private, because in government TASCA, such as TASCA Perpaduan, TASCA Genius and TASCA Kemas, there's a lot of perk and their salary is quite high.
You touched on this a little bit earlier and I wanted to expand. If we look specifically at the average B40 family in Malaysia, what are the affordable childcare options that are available, and do we even have enough of those?
No. As I mentioned, 10% TASCA in Malaysia, only 10% are government subsidised. 90% are private tasker. So in order for us to survive, we need to increase the tasker is quite expensive compared to the government, because especially pusat anak genius is almost zero fee. Tasker, kemas and perpaduan also is about RM25 per month. So compared to us, even though it's only 250 or 300, they will say it's totally, they will consider it's very expensive. So that's why we need the government to come into picture to help us giving the subsidized on the fee.
At the moment, would you say that cost does correlate to the quality and safety of childcare?
Not really, because we do have 3,000 per month childcare tasker in Malaysia. I know which is in KL, also some in Sarawak, but they merely, because I heard that the parents did complain. They said, they just send the children to sleep and to just to do nothing. There's no any activities that stimulate the children. But usually the medium one, the 600 to 800 tasker, which have a long service tasker, who have a lot of experience, these are the quality one. But for them to increase the fee, they for them, the children are like their own child. So they say they feel like it's very difficult for them to increase because the parents can't afford. But at the same time, if they can't increase, they also cannot survive. So this is the things, in the industry.
And in the long term, what strategies do you think could address these perennial issues of high childcare costs here?
As I mentioned earlier, the government has to play the role, increase the fee subsidies for the parents and also the salary per capita for the parents, so that more parents can, are eligible for these subsidy fees. And also, and it's a win-win situation. If the parents get the subsidy, the tasker can increase the fee, and it will be beneficial for everyone. If not, the government have to, take up the gap, because at the moment there's only 10% government tasker, and private, it should be, it should be the other way around, 90% tasker, government tasker and 10% private tasker. But it doesn't happen in Malaysia. That's the difference between Malaysia and other countries.
Anisa, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
All right, thank you.
That was Anisa Ahmad, President of the Association of Registered Childcare Providers Malaysia, talking to us about the cost of childcare and taskas specifically in our country, and perhaps some of the ways we need to be rethinking it. We want to hear from you. Is childcare affordable in Malaysia? And what do you think should be in place to help parents? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. I think we have time for some messages.
Let's start with this from Lillian, who says, my company offers childcare in the building and has a fee scheme where lower salaried staff pay a lower fee while senior employees pay higher fees. And I just love that message. And it's so good to hear that some companies at least do this.
I love this message. You know what drives me a little nuts? It's so logical.
Yes.
So because it is so logical, it's kind of harder to understand why it is that it hasn't been more widely instated, because it just makes sense.
No, and our guest earlier, Anisa, also referred to the fact that we really do need to have a system where you account for different earning levels rather than just a blanket solution that supposedly is supposed to solve the issue.
Keep those thoughts coming. Is childcare affordable in Malaysia? And what do you think should be in place to help parents? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at PFM Radio. After the 6:30 news, we will be back to talk a bit more about larger support systems, right? Things like parental leave, things like where the private sector can come in. So all of that will be covered after the 6:30 news. And keep those thoughts coming. You're listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:37 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're talking today about the cost of childcare in Malaysia and really, I suppose, expanding that conversation to what needs to be in place to help parents? Because right now, of course, this issue with the cost and accessibility of childcare is in some ways a side effect of there not being other supports in place for parents, for example, more leave, you know. So anyways, we'd like to hear from you. Is childcare affordable in Malaysia and what should be in place to help parents? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we move on to our next guest, we have time for messages.
So Yusiza says, childcare for special needs children costs more than a neurotypical child. Private school fees alone can range from 4,000 ringgit a month.
This is a really good point and an important one. I think that in general, the cost of special needs care is extremely high. And that also comes because you're talking about well-trained professionals and people who need to give that kind of very specialized, specific time and care to your child. And that feels like an intractable problem. And I think that that is where we come to that point about more investment or more resources being placed in this. We do also have Sharon who says childcare and elder care together is more than 2,000 ringgit. If you have both segments to take care of, how is a couple to cope? One of them will give up their job. For some couples, current government social support systems and policies are not enough. How is a working class couple to cope?
The perennial sandwich generation challenge, right? And Sharon, I'm so glad you brought that up because it's actually the reality for many, many families that you are contending with escalating costs of childcare at the same time caring for elderly parents. And it does, and these are the knock-on effects that we're talking about, right? The question of, well, should someone give up a job? Does someone have to give up a promotion? Think about how many hours you can put in at work. And these have far-reaching consequences.
Including, in the simplest sense, your own savings. Mm. You know, because of course you're saving on childcare and elder care, but you're not actually putting in savings because you are not working. So there's no EPF contributions. You know, the list goes on. And I think that these are the kind of societal impacts that we're talking about. Meanwhile, Abby, and to be fair, some other people are messaging in with a similar sentiment saying, if you can't afford childcare, don't have children nor ask for subsidies. I know I sound crude, but subsidies are pulling resources away from other more legitimate needs, and subsidies distort markets. They don't solve the root cause of the problem. We should subsidize or help those who have fallen on bad times so they can get back on their feet, not necessarily a lack of family planning.
So I'm assuming, Abby, that when you say subsidies, what you mean is government support. And I think that the counter argument to that, of course, is that as a nation, we rely on having a younger generation in many ways, right? I mean, we often talk about the issues of having an aging population. And I think it also goes back to what you think the role of a government is, because many would argue that that providing this sort of care and subsidizing or bearing the cost of this sort of care is one of the things that you expect from a functioning government.
Yeah, so I think that it's also important to say that we're not necessarily only talking about subsidies, which is why we use the word support, right? Because there are other ways to offer support and assistance without it necessarily always meaning the financial. And I speak as somebody who doesn't have children, but I think that if we take the long-term look, as you are, Abby, in terms of looking at like the larger societal structure or economic structure, the replacement rate matters. Mm. I'm not taking away all the sentimental, lovely reasons why people might want to have children. But just from an economic point of view, this is why countries are so worried about the replacement rate. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't think that it's an easy answer. Let us know. Essentially, we're talking about childcare cost. Is childcare affordable in our country? What should be in place to help parents? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we're going to be talking about that latter question, basically parental support. And joining us to talk about this is Sivanandi Thanindaran, Executive Director at the Asian Pacific Resource and Research Center for Women, or ARRO. Sivanandi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Twilin, and thank you, Sharmila, for inviting me.
So we spoke about this quite a bit in the first half of our show, but we wanted to get your thoughts. What do you make of the costs of childcare in Malaysia?
Yeah, actually, frankly, I must say that, you know, I was quite shocked to say that today's costs are about 3,000 ringgit for what most people would like term as some form of quality childcare, right? Because firstly, it's not going to be an easy task because this childcare responsibilities are primarily seen as replacing the work of a mother's care, right? And that itself, in everyone's experience, I mean, if you look at literature, you look at movies, you look at songs, it's supposed to be priceless. And yet it is, we call it priceless because we don't want to put a price to it, right? So I think that this is the big conundrum, right? And it's idealized. So I think that one of the ways in which we can do is like, we can look at what are the parameters and who deserves that childcare, right? And very often, you know, this childcare and having a child is seen as a penalty to women who are entering the workforce, you know? And I'm not sure whether earlier on, I mean, you probably in other shows, you would have covered that, you know, Khazanah's findings, you know, on their report was that most women who do well until university and all of that are not able to get productive work and they fall out during that phase of getting married and having kids, right? So this is a real challenge for women. Right. So definitely, you know, it's unaffordable and it's something that, you know, we need to look very seriously from, you know, different perspectives.
In that sense, then, do you think childcare is primarily seen as a female issue and therefore a mother's problem to solve?
Yeah, actually, I mean, I think that I joined at the point that you were also reading some messages, right, about like, it's not only childcare, it's also care of the elderly. And all of this, you know, this care work has for the longest time been known as women's work. Right. So in a society where lifespans are longer, you know, women are caring for both the young and the aged simultaneously, as you said, in the sandwich generation. Right. And, you know, this care work, you know, simply refers to the work of caring for others, whether it's unpaid care for family members and friends. It could be paid care, but it also means like taking care of children, elderly, sick and the disabled, you know, as well as doing domestic work such as cleaning and cooking. So there's a whole variety of work which is falling under this locus of care work, right? And the thing is, you know, we need to like kind of also say that, you know, care work is just not about care. It's also work. So, and as work needs to be, you know, compensated and recognized in some way, right? And because of this gender imbalances that exist in society, this burden of care work is often borne by women, right? And it's not exclusively borne by women, but, and it's not always borne by choice. Right. And care work has, because it's women's work, it has been economically devalued or inadequately recognized or compensated for. And for many years, you know, care work, you know, and you can see this perhaps in the middle class or the upper middle class families where even that care work is outsourced, right, to domestic migrant workers. So we are looking at, oh, what is going to be the way in which I can handle this cost of care in what ways? Right. And every family is like trying to adjust and balance that out. And of course, for those families where the care, the costs of providing that care outweigh the income that you can earn from being at work, then they make this choice of like having people who, you know, then stay home and do this care work. And that's very often, you know, the women, you know, so and I think that when we look at who can solve this problem? We have to look at three stakeholders. I think the government is a player. Of course, companies and employers also need to step up in some way. And but we also need to look at the family itself, you know, and the dynamics within the family and see how on earth, how can we actually first get men and in the family to play their role adequately. Right? Because it is not always the onus should not be on women to be able to not only go to work and then come home to play the full role of a full-time housewife or doing all of the care work. So if we look at things like caring for the children, which involve, you know, reading to them, feeding them, cooking their food, taking care of them, these are gender neutral activities, aren't they? It's like both men and women can do these tasks. So it is just prescribed gender roles in society, which divide work into men's work and women's work. So we, I mean, like, so I feel like, so there is also a discourse and a change of mindset that needs to be taken into account. So women who are able to actually balance all of this three are receiving, you know, at this point, I assume, you know, necessary support from their employers and necessary support from, you know, the men in their lives, you know. So those are the women who are juggling it best, you know. So, but we can then, of course, have a conversation about then who is left out from this equation.
We're speaking today with Sivanandi Thanindaran, Executive Director at Arrow, about essentially parental support or the kind of parental support that is needed while having this conversation about the cost of childcare. Keep those thoughts coming. We'll be back to continue our conversation after this. You're listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:49 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn and Sharmila. We're continuing our conversation now about the cost of childcare and narrowing it, or rather broadening it in some ways, to talk about parental support in light of this. So we are speaking with Sivanandi Thanindaran, Executive Director at the Asian Pacific Resource and Research Centre for Women. Sivanandi, so there are a number of issues here on both sides of the equation, I think. We have parents saying that the cost of childcare is inaccessible. There's also, on the other hand, the question of whether we pay our childcare providers enough. And I wanted to focus on that latter bit because you were talking about care work. Do we pay our childcare providers fairly?
Yeah, definitely. I think that that is not possible. I mean, but it's because, you know, this has become a set of duties that came from motherhood, right? So mothers were performing this multiple roles, you know, I mean, and I mean, like your memories of your mothers will also tell you, I mean, they were quality chefs, they sourced the materials beautifully, then they spent time in, like, you know, telling you the stories, the traditions, they taught you to read, they teach us to write. I mean, like, all of these things provided the kind of work that goes into raising a child. Right. And basically, if you look at it, I mean, like, so they were chef, they were, you know, domestic manager, they were kindergarten teachers, they were sometimes, if they taught you songs, music teachers. I mean, like, they brought in. So if we take each of those tasks and break it down, you know, how much would that cost? Right. And if we say that that's what quality childcare is all about, I think even if at the upper range of 3,000 that was quoted to you, you know, I mean, it wouldn't cover that. Right. I mean, if you have a 5-year-old child and then you send them for music lessons, you send them for teaching, reading, writing, you know, Kumon, whatever it is. Right. It's not enough. Right, to cover for those costs. So I think that the first thing is that, you know, childcare is something that is a very specialist sort of intervention, you know. And I remember that many years ago, somebody quoted to me that kindergarten teachers should be paid more than even secondary teachers because they are, you know, trying to stimulate the child in so many ways, and they have to teach them so many things, right? And how, like, I think in some country, and I forget now which country it was, that, you know, kindergarten teachers had master's degrees, you know, whereas like primary school teachers not necessarily have to be equipped with master's degrees. And because of that, I feel like, you know, we have to value quality childcare maximally, right? So, but then, who can afford that then? You know, only perhaps the very rich can afford that type of, you know, and will be transported into, you know, the Mary Poppins era of governesses who took care, you know, which is, again, you know, was it not the elite class's way of outsourcing their care work to someone else, right? Usually a spinster lady who is well-educated from a lower-income group. I mean, that's what it's all about. And that's how we've been trying to handle it. But I feel like, you know, it is the childcare providers need to be compensated fairly, because if we want quality childcare, then we have to be able to pay for it. But who is this we? You know, I think is a question that you want to address.
Yes, and which brings us really to the government, right? As it stands, what have we seen the government do to help with the cost of childcare, and are they doing enough?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, very often this provision of childcare is seen as as the intervention in order to make return women to the labor force. Okay, so this is how it's very often framed. right? And which is why I think one of your messages was about, you know, it's seen as a subsidy for a woman worker, and a subsidy for a woman worker, just like maternity leave, then becomes something that's a penalty for being a woman worker, right? But I think that we should actually start looking at and framing childcare as that quality childcare should be seen as the right of every child. Right. And we can argue this from the standpoint of what we feel what every child is entitled to live up to their fullest potential. Right. What does every child need? And why is it that what every child needs is being determined right now by the circumstances of birth? Right. And this is where I think the state's responsibility to the children is something that we need to really emphasize, you know, and it has to do more in that role. But I find that, of course, you know, these conversations, you know, are often like kind of, how do I say, they bring different sorts of stakeholders into this equation. And employers will say, oh, I don't want to give paternity leave, you know, I don't want to give this, or there is a cost to that. Of course, there's a cost to that. But we as a society have to say, what do we value over that cost, right? And sometimes that value of that, you know, outweighs the cost. Right. So I think in that we also have to say, like, the state has a responsibility not only to provide this quality childcare, but we can actually say, OK, what are those parameters? We don't have to set it at, you know, Olympic level, you know, of sport. I mean, we can state it at a state level, you know, and say, OK, what do we think that every child in our country is entitled to? Is it quality nutrition? Is it quality caregiving X amount of year, X amount of hours? What type of play areas are children entitled to? And how many hours of play should a child have? You know, and if we can provide each and every child with that, then we can see that, you know, we help not only parents in solving that issue, but we also live up to our responsibility as the state. Right. And it's also puzzling. I mean, like right now, because there's a lot of we're not the only society grappling with this issue of care. And I don't know whether, you know, in other shows you have covered, you know, there is this term which is called the care economy. Right. So it is not only about childcare, but it's also about elderly care. And, you know, I think that, you know, Malaysia, you know, we have a fertile environment actually to develop a care economy, you know, I think that, you know, so you can see that how you can provide this, you know, parameters of care for every child, and at the same time, you know, develop the care economically simultaneously, right? So it kind of is a win-win situation, which I feel that the government can do more in. But to give some, you know, credit where it is due, I mean, I think in the past months, we have seen, you know, trying to pass the extended maternity leave. We have seen, you know, trying to pass the paternity leave. I mean, like, these are some measures I feel like the government has done in order to, like, kind of help shift the mindset, you know, on whose roles, whose responsibilities it is. But I find that very often, you know, there are very strategic interest lobby groups or whatever, who are forever like kind of looking at, oh no, this is going to hit our pocket or hit our pocket. I mean, every choice hits our pocket. I mean, why can't we hit our pockets for the right choices, right? Is what we are asking.
We have just a minute left with you. How can companies play a role in helping out here, and why would it be advantageous to them?
I think that definitely, you know, some companies, some multinational companies that I know of, which I've been invited to give talks to, I mean, I know that they've taken a lot of, initiative to actually provide, you know, creches or, you know, allowances, you know, work from home and flexible work schedules. But again, you know, who are those who are able to work those jobs? Right. So we have to look at, like, you know, again, you know, the class factor or the income factor in this. So women who already have some form of privilege sometimes are able to get more of these benefits in comparison to, you know, women who are perhaps working a daily wage job or in an hourly wage or a piece by piece work. right? So I think that these are some of those that we have to look at, you know, so to try to step up some of those. And that's where I believe that maybe the subsidy framework for, you know, small and medium enterprises may actually help go a longer distance, you know, because we think that, you know, the bigger companies are already making, are valuing their women workers in such a way and providing some of this compensation for those women workers.
Sivanandi, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much.
That was Sivanandi Thanendran, Executive Director at ARRO, the Asian Pacific Resource and Research Centre for Women. Keep those thoughts coming. Is childcare affordable in Malaysia? What should be in place to help parents? You can call us, WhatsApp us, tweet us, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.